Welcome to Listen 2. This is Ted. The news was published on Friday, October 11th. Today we're joined by Eric and Kate to discuss science hacks for a longer life. Let's dive right in, shall we?
Absolutely, Ted. I'm excited to share some fascinating insights on this topic.
Me too, though I might have a different take on some of these so-called hacks.
Great. Let's start with the importance of job satisfaction. Eric, what's your take on this?
Well, Ted, job satisfaction is absolutely crucial. A 2010 study of 7,524 London civil servants showed that those who were bored at work actually had shorter lifespans. It's mind-blowing, isn't it? We're not just talking about money or career advancement here. This is about finding genuine fulfillment in your day-to-day work life. It could literally add years to your life.
Oh, come on. That's such an oversimplification. Many people don't.
I understand your point, Kate, but this isn't about luxury, it's about health. The study clearly shows a link between boredom and mortality. We're talking about cold, hard facts here. People should absolutely prioritize job satisfaction when making career choices. It's not just about being happy at work, it could be a matter of life and death.
And how do you propose people do that in this economy? Not everyone can just quit their job and find
Look,
a new
one. I'm not saying it's easy, but it's necessary. We spend a huge chunk of our lives at work. If that time is miserable, it takes a toll on our health. Maybe it's about finding small ways to make your current job more engaging or slowly working towards a career change. The point is, we can't ignore this connection between job satisfaction and longevity.
Interesting points from both of you. Let's move on to another life-saving tip. What can you tell us about the connection between our bodies and lightning storms?
Oh, this is fascinating, Ted. Our bodies can actually sense an impending lightning strike. It's like we have a built-in early warning system. When your hair stands on end during a storm, it's not just static electricity. It's a warning sign that lightning is about to strike nearby. It's nature's way of telling us to take cover pronto.
That's just an old wives' tale. There's no scientific evidence that our bodies...
I'm afraid you're mistaken, Kate. This isn't folklore, it's basic physics. The buildup of negative charges in storm clouds repels electrons in our bodies, causing our hair to stand up. It's the same principle that makes those static electricity balls at science museums work. Our bodies are essentially acting as natural lightning detectors.
Even if that's true, it's not practical advice. Are we supposed to constantly check if our hair is standing up during a storm?
It's not about constantly checking, Kate. It's about awareness. If you notice this happening, you should immediately seek shelter, preferably in a car which acts as a Faraday cage. It's a potentially life-saving piece of knowledge. Better to know it and not need it than the other way around, right?
What? You're just throwing around jargon now. How is a car supposed to protect you?
A Faraday cage, Kate, is a conductive enclosure that blocks external electric fields. A car's metal body acts like one. If lightning strikes, the electrical charge is distributed around the outside of the vehicle, keeping you safe inside. It's not jargon. It's a crucial safety concept that everyone should understand.
Let's put this in historical context. Can you think of any similar life-saving discoveries from the past?
Absolutely, Ted. The discovery of hand washing in medical settings by Ignaz Semmelweis in the 1840s is a perfect example. This guy noticed that doctors who washed their hands between autopsies and delivering babies had much lower rates of puerperal fever in their patients. It was a game changer in medical hygiene, saving countless lives. And yet, at first, people thought he was nuts.
That's hardly comparable. Hand washing is a proven medical practice, not some vague advice about job satisfaction or hair standing on end.
Actually, Kate, the principle is exactly the same. Both are about observing patterns and using that knowledge to save lives. Semmelweis faced ridicule and skepticism, much like you're displaying now, but his persistence led to a massive breakthrough in public health. Who knows? Maybe in 100 years, people will look back at job satisfaction studies the same way we now view hand washing as obvious and essential.
Are you seriously comparing modern scientific studies to 19th century medicine? We've come a long way since then.
The point isn't about the specific time period, Kate. It's about the process of discovery and application. Seemingly small observations can lead to big health impacts. Semmelweis saved countless lives with his discovery. Just as paying attention to job satisfaction could extend lifespans today, it's all part of the same continuum of scientific progress.
But Semmelweis had concrete evidence. These modern hacks seem more like guesswork. You can't just throw around vague
advice. It's not guesswork, Kate. These modern studies use rigorous statistical analysis and controlled experiments. They're backed by data, just like Semmelweis's observations. The only difference is that we now have more sophisticated tools to measure and analyze these effects. Science evolves, but the fundamental process of observation, hypothesis, and testing remains the same.
Interesting comparison. Now let's talk about food safety. What historical context can we apply to the advice about storing rice?
Great question, Ted. The discovery of food preservation techniques in the 19th century revolutionized food safety. Nicholas Appert's invention of canning in 1810 is a great parallel to modern food storage advice. Appert figured out that heating food in sealed containers could prevent spoilage. It's not so different from our modern understanding of quickly refrigerating rice to prevent bacterial growth.
Canning is completely different from refrigerating rice. You can't compare industrial processes to home cooking. That's
where you're coming from, Kate, but the principle of preventing bacterial growth is the same. Appert's method prevented food spoilage just as quickly refrigerating rice prevents the growth of Bacillus cereus. Both techniques are about creating an environment where harmful bacteria can't thrive. It's all about food safety, whether it's in a factory or your kitchen.
But canning involves extreme heat. Refrigeration is a completely different process. You're oversimplifying complex.
You're right that the specific processes are different, but the goal is the same, preventing bacterial growth. Canning uses heat to kill bacteria and create a seal, while refrigeration slows bacterial growth. Both are about controlling the environment to keep food safe. It's like two different routes to the same destination, food that won't make you sick.
Looking ahead, how might these scientific insights shape our future? Eric, what's your prediction?
I believe we're on the cusp of a revolution in workplace design, Ted. Companies will start to prioritize employee engagement, not just as a feel-good measure, but as a way to boost productivity and longevity. We might see mandatory interest surveys or job rotation programs to combat boredom. Imagine a world where your workplace actively tries to keep you interested and engaged, knowing it's good for their bottom line and your health.
That's unrealistic. Corporations won't invest in employee satisfaction unless forced. We need stricter labor laws and stronger unions.
I think you're underestimating the power of self-interest here, Kate. Companies that prioritize employee satisfaction will see increased productivity and reduced healthcare costs. It's a win-win situation. Smart businesses are already catching on to this. Look at tech companies with their fun office perks. They're not doing it out of the goodness of their hearts, but because it works.
That's naive. Without regulation, companies will always prioritize short-term profits over employee well-being. You can't just expect
businesses to... I disagree. More and more companies are realizing that employee well-being is directly linked to long-term profitability. It's not about being nice. It's about being smart. Happy, engaged employees are more productive, take fewer sick days, and stick around longer. That's just good business sense. We're seeing a shift from viewing employees as resources to viewing them as assets to be nurtured.
Interesting perspectives. Now, how do you see our understanding of the human body's warning systems evolving?
I predict we'll develop more sophisticated early warning systems based on our body's natural abilities. Imagine a device that could detect subtle changes in our physiology to predict everything from storms to heart attacks. We're already seeing the beginnings of this with smartwatches that can detect irregular heartbeats. In the future, we might have wearables that can alert us to impending health issues or environmental dangers before we're even aware of them.
That's just science fiction. We should focus on practical solutions like improving weather forecasting and medical diagnostics. Not some far-fetched body sensors.
It's not far-fetched at all, Kate. We already have wearable devices that monitor heart rate, blood oxygen, and even stress levels. The next step is interpreting this data for predictive health. Think about it. If a watch can tell you're about to have a heart attack before you feel any symptoms, that could be a real lifesaver. It's not science fiction. It's the logical next step in personalized healthcare.
Those devices are notoriously inaccurate. We shouldn't base healthcare decisions on unreliable gadgets. That's potentially
dangerous. Technology is improving rapidly, Kate. Sure, early versions had issues, but that's true of any new technology. In a few years, these devices could be as common and reliable as thermometers. We're talking about a potential revolution in preventive healthcare. Imagine catching diseases at their earliest stages or being able to optimize your daily routine for better health based on real-time data from your body.
That's an overstatement. There's a big difference between measuring temperature and predicting complex health events.
I understand your skepticism, Kate, but remember that what seems impossible today often becomes commonplace tomorrow. Just a few decades ago, the idea of carrying a powerful computer in your pocket would have seemed like science fiction. Now, smartphones are ubiquitous. The same could happen with health monitoring technology. We're on the brink of a new era in personalized medicine, and it's exciting to think about the possibilities.
Well, that's all the time we have for today. Thanks to Eric and Kate for this lively discussion on science hacks for a longer life. It's clear that while these ideas show promise, there's still much debate about their practical application. As always, we encourage our listeners to do their own research and consult with healthcare professionals for personalized advice. Until next time, this is Ted signing off from Listen 2.